The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Taking Stock. It is 12 o'clock. It is the second day of the second month of the year 2024. That sounds almost scientific, futuristic. The year 2024. That's where we are, John, isn't it?
Well, there you go. Who'd have thought
it? The year 2525. Do you remember that song?
No.
It's a good song. Did you know that song? If anyone's watching, by the way, you know that song. Who sang that? It keeps going up. In the year 3535 and all that stuff. It's quite good. I quite like it. Anyway, welcome, everyone. Hit that thumbs up button. Like, subscribe if you could. And I've got to say, there's very little news around. I was scraping around for stuff to look and talk about. I think, obviously, we ramble on about anything anyway, but there's very little even macro news. There's nothing about. In the end, I went with, who's going to win this year? Bull or bears? Because I started thinking about the Six Nations, right? Because that's starting tonight, Six Nations. I do like the Six Nations a lot. And for me, being a Welshman, right, it's probably the best part of Six Nations before it starts, before you start losing. So that's it's, you know, I really look forward to it until the games start. But anyway, comments there. What do you think, ladies and gentlemen, at the end of this year? Most people think it's a foregone conclusion that the markets will rally and go higher. But what do you think? Who are you, a bull or bear? Where is the market going to be end of this year? AIM, for example, AIM All Share, is it going to be higher or just going to trade in a pattern for a while? Because I couldn't do that, you know. What do you reckon, John? Do you higher or lower? Higher, lower, higher, higher.
I mean, look at it. So there is some news this week is obviously from the US, because you've had some of the big tech companies reporting.
Yes, I can't do that. Apple took a bit of a dive on Outlook.
Yeah. But you know, the numbers are pretty good. But look at the Nasdaq. I mean, look at the chart. If it's going higher, it's going to higher highs. I mean, it's really, really been very strong over the last, you know, 6 months. Yeah. You know, so the bulls are already winning.
In the US. The UK?
Well, look at the FTSE 100.
Let's have a look at it.
You know, it's not quite as powerful an upward move there, but it's certainly not, you know, it's not in the doldrums. It's only a, boy, what are you talking, 350 points off its all-time, off its high?
Well, you've got a wedge formation, sort of range. Yeah, I think it's going to break out. I think it will break out. I mean, maybe a little down here. Break out here when interest rates start coming down. Definitely.
I guess if you think about, you know, there's the old expression, you know, markets climb a wall of worry, then, you know, the FTSE 100 and the Nasdaq 100 have definitely done that in the past couple of years. Mm. So you know, there is this sort of prevailing view that, you know, things are about to get better. The rate cycle is about to turn, and lower rates are on the way. But at the same time, you know, markets have not exactly priced in a worst case scenario there. Certainly not the US, and obviously the FTSE 100 is looking pretty strong as well.
In answer to the question I gave the right honourable gentleman a few minutes ago, bull or bear, John?
I mean, neither.
Sitting on the fence there between the bull and the bear.
Yeah. I think what you actually have now is, index funds have obviously benefited, you know, hugely from the way that markets have behaved in recent years, but. But you know, with valuations elevated, turning, you know, the sort of bit Magnificent Seven or six, if you discount Tesla, then I do think, you know, it's all going to be about stock selection. I'm bullish on the basis that there are still some pockets of value out there.
Thank you, sir.
I'm bearish at a sort of headline level, because I think markets have you know, just been very strong despite some, you know, ongoing bad news, really, behind.
Yeah, but the strong markets, so we took the S&P, the Nasdaq, we know that's, you know, literally weighted towards the Mag 7, whatever they call these huge behemoths of companies that are doing like 30% growth. But even those, they're not infallible. It does get to the stage where you think, okay, they can't keep going up. These valuations are ridiculous. And I think people are suggesting, will the rally broaden out? I think it will. I think what you need to see is almost like a range being hit in these companies where they stop going up. I'm not saying they'll come back down quickly, but they may stop going up, trundle, and people will look for opportunities elsewhere and realize, hang on a sec, the mid caps, the small caps, they haven't rallied. They're cheap, some good bargains there. And so they go looking at the forage in other areas to find the returns. Anyway, this is the market day. Green screen, FTSE 100 up 31%, FTSE 250 up 1% there, that's good. And AIM All Share up over 0.5%. Sainsbury's is the biggest riser. BT Group, do you still hold those, John?
I do, yeah. Yeah, it's funny, though. Yesterday they had a trading update, which was, you know, on the face of it, very strong. The shares opened very strongly. They were about 5% at one point, ended the day down. You know, they're sort of recovering a bit of ground today, but that's a big regret. I moved home recently, and obviously when you move home, you've got to send your broadband kit back to BT. Otherwise, they threaten you with being charged for it. And they sent me a bag to put it in to send back. Honestly, nice. I've got smaller pillowcases than the bag they sent for this tiny router. I don't quite know what they're thinking. That router is not getting back in one piece either.
How old is the router?
2.5 years. It's just for recycling.
What's the point of that? It's like...
Tell me. It's,
I know. How much money are they going to make? That's why the share price is down there.
You could fit
a year old. You just say, well, you know what? Recycle it, please.
You could literally fit an IBM PC from 1982 in the bag that they've sent. It's absolutely absurd. And, you know, I just sit there thinking, well, I mean, it's a tangent, but I sit there thinking, what is this company doing?
we're going to send you a little branded pillowcase. Can you put your old router in it and send it back? Are you that short of pennies, BT, that you want this old router back?
I think it's to do with recycling targets. So there's things called the WEEE directive and there's another one about big electric equipment recycling, and they obviously have ESG targets to hit and blah blah blah. But at the same time, this is just it's farcical.
BP, Glencore, Rio Tinto, some of the miners down today. I know Diageo are on the hunt for a new chairman. I hope to turn that around. Good luck with that.
They've got a new chief exec, haven't they?
Yeah, I think I saw it on where did I see it? I don't know if it's on our site or somewhere. But Diageo are looking for a new chairman to turn the share price around because it's going to, do you know what? It's a big job, but you probably get paid handsomely for it. There we are. So we're going to be looking at what is do you know what AIM is? I keep going back to AIM. It's setting up very well, and you know, like you said, that we are literally a few days now from the Golden Cross. It's up above the 200-day moving average for the second time, and look at that. It's literally a nice little high compared to this. So I quite like that. I think it's going to be a bull market year. It was a surprise there. I've been saying that for a while, but what we're going to look at, John, is what is it? Your hang on, where is it? By
no, ultra not there. Screen.
Yeah, front page. I don't want that one. What's going on here? Hang on, bear with me. Caller. Let's look at your ultra screen. So
yeah, I like this one.
Explain what this is, John. It's a screener here. That's ultra screen. Yeah. What is it?
Which I've now lost. Where is my ultra screen? There it is. I call it the ultra screen because if you look at the companies that pop out of this, you can see why I call it the ultra screen. I mean, it's a combination of quality and growth metrics and to an extent valuation. Mm-hmm. So you know, what you're hoping this screen churns out is the best of the best. And so when you look at some of the companies on it, that would seem to support that the approach actually does what it's supposed to do. So, you know, YouGov, which had a trading update this week, you know, very strong forecast for this year, unsurprisingly, given that we are in an election year, big election year globally. And obviously they do their political polling, but their sort of data products are integral to the way that companies operate these days. HVivo, obviously, we've spoken about that a lot.
I like the way you do these fantastic screens, and a couple of stocks just happen to be in the screen.
Or is it that the screens happen and then I happen to buy the stocks thereafter? So, you know, is it the chicken or the egg
It hit a 52-week high, didn't it, HVivo, yesterday or day before? I got an alert on that somewhere. But here we are. Yeah, look at that.
What else? We've got 4imprint. We've spoken about it before. Again, a company that I like a great deal. And, you know, this is a company.
So hang on. So what are we picking out on this? So what's the metrics on this screen? So you're saying.
We're looking for growth. So we want headline growth, you know, turnover growth. And I say above 5% because, you know, you just want to see growth above inflation. But really, you want that to be magnified at the bottom line. So you want to see profits, pre-tax profits, not, you know, real profits.
10%.
Actually growing at a faster rate than sales growth. You want to see that being turned into cash. You know, so, you know, profits can be manipulated. Cash, generally speaking, can't. So you want to see a good chunk of those pre-tax profits, or rather EPS, you know, the post-tax figure, being translated into cash. So all these companies are very, very cash generative. You want to see them without debt. Sorry, I've missed one. Return on invested capital. Saying, you know, is the money that's being invested in the business generating good return? So you want to see a minimum of 15% for that.
That's quite high, yeah.
It's quite high. You want them to be lowly geared. And, you know, in fact, all of these are negatively geared in that they have cash.
Yeah.
So all of these companies are cash generative. Cash positive on a balance sheet basis.
It would be interesting to see what the performance of these are, because I know a lot of them have done very well already. Are there any ones in there that haven't, you know, done that so well yet, chart wise?
That's true.
AJ Bell hasn't. Or Dark Twist is down there, I think.
This is what I do. So actually, you know, I was doing this the other day. I was taking a screen like this, then going away, looking at the charts, and where you've got, you know, something that's perhaps fallen a bit out of favour, you know, then that's when I'm thinking, okay, then, you know, this is where potentially there's a bit more value. What there is also, there's a third, some final columns, which are where we talk about value. So actually here, you know, it's forecast PE, very basic valuation measure. I haven't put any limits on places to what in places to what these PE rates should be. But this is just to give you a feel. So then you can see, you know, Galliford Trite there, you know, falls into the screen, but very, very lowly rated. Renew, Wilmington, you know, very lowly rated, despite being, you know, exhibiting these qualities. And then we look at the PEG as well. So I've talked about this on a recent show, you know, are earnings forecast to grow at a higher rate than the PE rating? So if you've got one less than one, then that suggests they're cheap as well.
Yeah,
you've got a couple of different metrics there. So look, Ingenta keeps popping out of these screens. Ingenta keeps popping out of everything. Every screen Ingenta. I run, Ingenta's popping out.
ING, yeah.
Really cool. Yeah, this one keeps popping out. I did have a quick look at it, but it's one that
it's very liquid. We recently looked at that, didn't we? It's very liquid.
I think Paul Hill spoke about this with the fund manager recently on one of his videos.
Okay. It's come off a little bit from 190 to 169. That would be, you know, just if it's that illiquid, a couple of cells will take it down. But
a couple of cells after a move like that.
AJ Bell, right? I mean, it's had fake rallies before, right? But you can see here last time he sort of did this golden cross thing was here, a little rally, but that was still, you know, bear market territory. So are we now coming towards the end of this? Because it's starting to cross here. But if you can get above that 330, maybe that's good level. But I think it needed a little bit more sideways action there. Sideways action. What else is there?
Keystone Oil. It's a really good mix.
Surprised that Interseed, which rallied very strongly, the PEG is 0.2. IGP, Interseed, and that's rallied. I keep getting that in Ingenta mixed up because they are both illiquid, both begin with I.
One thing I would always say about screening data as well is, you know, this is looking at an entire market in one fell swoop, you know. I would always advise, you know, if you see something that pops out and it, you know, it looks like remarkably cheap on various levels, or, you know, figures, they don't seem to make sense, like you just said, then, you know, you have to go away and then look again, you know, do your own research into the numbers. Is that figure correct? Because some of these, you know, data is very hard to get right, and a lot of sometimes, very occasionally, you know, a figure is wrong, and therefore you get a bum result. You know, so what else is there? I mean, you group talks about a lot of Tristel, you know, which, I mean, they're a bit out of favour. They obviously boom during the pandemic, the hospital disinfecting. Yeah. But they're starting, lost a bit of ground, back in an uptrend again.
Yeah, that's good. Look, there seems to have higher highs, higher lows.
Keystone Law, I mean, this is, you know, the sort of listed legal set, so that's fallen a bit out of favour, but again, it's back into an uptrend.
Yeah, I should have alerted on that recently.
I know this is one that that some of our viewers have pointed out we have a look at. So this screen, I think this is a formidable screen, really, because you look at what comes out of it, and as I say, it's high quality. Gamma Communications. You know, again, out
gamma,
of favor.
Gamma Community. Why did I say that? I don't know. What is Gamma Communications? What do they do?
Oh, it's tech. So I can't remember. It's communications as a service.
I put literally lines on there from previously looking at it and see that long range. But you can see, you usually get these ranges when you've had a cracking run.
Yeah.
I quite like that. Whenever you get that, honestly, it can go on another run. But it'll take a while to just get out of this range. I'm gamma. Hang on a sec. Let's have a look at that.
But what you have is a couple of weak years, you know, where profits sort of weren't moving in the right direction.
They're quite big, aren't they? They're quite big.
But, you know, your forecasts are expected to rise from here. So, you know, it's, again, just very, very cash generative. Very cash generative.
What does that mean? There are unified communications as a service solutions. I don't know. I've looked at that and said what they mean.
Communications as a service. Well, you know, like in the old days, if you had an office, you'd have had your own switchboard and all the phones would have been wired into it. And, you know, now everything is done through basically the cloud, through digital, through you know, voice over internet protocol or whatever it might be. So, you know,
so what's their headwinds and tailwinds? What you know? Where are they? Is the market?
Nah, I mean, you take corporate. You know, they're dependent upon corporate investment. You know, so you know, our company's investing money. Our company's investing in IT, and you know, we have had a bit of a down cycle in IT. You know, whilst we look at the likes of Microsoft and you know Google, and we always think about tech as just being this sort of infinitely upward growing market. You know, it is very cyclical in terms of, you know, certainly corporate spending. We saw in BT's numbers, the business line was weaker this year. What you would be hoping is that, you know, as we sort of move into a cycle where companies start to invest in their tech infrastructure, and I think with AI coming and, you know, efficiency being top of the agenda, that could be likely to coming. But I mean, just look at that cash generation.
Look at the cash generation. You have a 40% pretty much.
Unbelievable.
Which percentage is just, and so they're saying that the latest known sell side analyst estimates that the full year ended 31st December adjusted EBITDA between 113 and 116. EPS 74.2
pence,
75.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I mean, you know, who else you've got here? Bioventix. I mean, what a company that is. What a company that is.
So what are they doing now?
They do the monoclonal sheep antibodies.
Yeah, test stuff on sheep, don't they?
Well, they provide the antibodies to people developing drugs, but and they really work with many of the big sort of big equipment manufacturers, of which there are only a few, and they've really got the market.
It's like Valley, don't they? But it's almost like
it's a classic moat. It's a moat company. It's very hard to get into that industry because they've got it sewn up. As you see, they mentioned their Roche Diagnostics, Siemens, Abbott Diagnostics, etc. And you know, there's increasing demand for this stuff. But the other interesting thing is there's this principle. You know, some companies, and the WD-40 effect, an old colleague of mine used to call it, and it's basically it's a big market for that company, but it's not big enough for anyone else to go after it. Yeah. So you know that means that the moat is doubly strong. The economic moat.
Got it. I put a line on there before, and it's obviously broken up there than previous highs. But so they do stuff with sheep. If you're interviewing the CEO, don't start off with that line. So you do stuff with sheep, then you mess around with sheep and stuff. How do you make money from that then? I don't think they'd be impressed with that as a starter.
No. You wouldn't start a conversation with a Welshman like that, either, would you?
Yeah. Okay, that's okay. Renew Sirica Spectral. Spectra Systems. Oh, is there two in there? Well, Spectra Systems. Spectra,
yeah, it's got two share classes. I don't know what it is. It confuses me, that one.
Wise. Yeah, you. So let's look at you, because you came up with. I do you know what? I literally. Have you visited their website?
I haven't actually. No.
It's great. It's excellent. YouGov.
YouGov. Yeah, no, I have. I've used them before. Sorry, I thought you meant YouGroup, who are also on the list.
Oh, yeah. So literally anything, government approval. So if you type in, it's like, what, investing or something. I don't know what happens there, but you can see article, Sixth Sense. Oh, I don't know. But anyway, that didn't work out. But look at that. Entertainment, British mood measure, weekly.
Yeah.
Stressed, happy, government approval, contemporary actors, ranked by popularity in the UK. Morgan Freeman, Judy Dench, Harrison Ford, Michael Caine, well, there's only two Englishmen there, but entertainment, is that how often do Brits go to the theatre, musicals?
This is the stuff I need in my life. These are the sort of headline fun things, but you know,
Blanket is ahead of Keir Starmer and Boris Johnson's fifth in the fourth. Look at that. Andy Burnham. Oh, yeah, Andy Burnham does come across quite genuine, actually.
How strange. But they could, you know, YouGov can delve into very granular detail about, you know, individual brands and you know, the relationship that their customers have with them. It's powerful, powerful stuff. You know, big data. Big data at work.
Energy and utilities, ranked by popularity, Octopus, British Gas, E.ON, Valiant.
None of them are particularly popular, I think you'll notice there. It was the same with politicians as well.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. There you go. Click on that. Go back to that. Let's see what it says. Artificial intelligence. What is it? If you click that, what does it say?
What is it about? Oh, there
you go. Click that.
John Henry AI.
Yeah. How
intelligent are Brits think robots are? That's right. Most robots have already developed high levels of intelligence than humans. I say 48%. How do you look at this? They're saying robots will be able to develop the higher levels of intelligence than humans in future. Okay. So they're saying that. I don't know what that means.
Okay. Anyway, yeah. So there you go. The ultra screen. You know, whilst there's some companies in there that have already done well, I suspect you'll find some in there that have some room to go. But as I say, because they exhibit the same characteristics. You know, and actually just one more, Games Workshop, you know, always been a fantastic performer. What are you looking at now?
Our prenuptial agreement's unromantic. Yeah, I do love you, dear. Do us a favour, though, before we get married, you sign on dotted line here. Yeah, I mean, how could you break that in a romantic way? So this is a look at YouGov. They are 1.3 billion half-year trading update. Are they not down? They are a little bit down, but they've been strong. I'm surprised they weren't more down. This is a well-written email, RNS, this, because they did say here, despite the continued challenging macroeconomic, we can see sales momentum. They did say within it, they almost interweave within it, we are seeing a bit of you know, headwinds. But you know, there are MA and Apex headwinds, revenue problem, but it didn't drop a lot. I mean, this is one of those companies who had good momentum, and
they're still well off their all time highs, though. You know,
So
you know, there's a bit of scope in there to absorb a bit of short term stuff.
That is the bloody rise, isn't it? Look at that. Why didn't I get into them down there? Hey, 149.
Let's not go into this discussion.
That's a ten bagger, John. That's
yes.
A bloody 10 bagger.
Yes.
You get a bag now if you're lucky, but not a 10 bagger.
The bag is good. A bag is good.
Anyway, let's look. A couple of comments, everyone. Informer. I'm always quite musical today.
The Six Nations is coming.
I'll leave that to you, be the judge of that. Why would you invest in a company like BT that actually employs people and provides services beyond me? I don't know. I think big tech will struggle this year. I agree.
Yeah,
I think it already goes so high, and some of them will just, you know, once they start trading in the ranges, people get, you know, they're not making the gains they used to. They'll look elsewhere, and I think it'll be in other areas. Like I say, you said, mining, airlines, housing, and service sector will gain the most.
I tend to agree with that. I think, I think the market's still, the flow is waiting still towards these big, you know, big companies, big tech companies. So they sort of, it almost feels like an inevitability that they'll keep getting stronger. But you know, the mean reversion must kick in at some point, and I do agree that. You know, it's going to be the bombed out sectors that you'll see the big rises as the cycle turns. Now, I do think there's, you know, we're not out of the economic rough seas yet, but we will be. We will be at some point. And yet, there are lots of opportunities in those sectors where valuations are low because of the concerns about the economy.
Yeah, exactly. And I think once people I've heard it so many times mentioned on CNBC about looking at mid to small caps. It's not quite happening yet, but there's more chatter on that happening. And once the Mag 7 stumble or stop going up as they have been, people think, well, I can't get gains here now anymore. So look elsewhere, and it'll trickle down. Money will be taken out of that. Is Venture Life a growth company in the making? That's Gregory Kemp.
I don't know the company very well. It's one that Paul Hill looks after at our end. So I couldn't answer you, but it's doing well. Paul's, have a read of Paul's article on the site.
Bear with me. I think I made a little. It's improving, definitely. I mean, we did look at it. We talked about it today on Hot Stocks, and essentially, you've got revenue going up, margins getting better, and their debt coming down. So it has that sort of fuel, literally, twin engine fuel to get going there. So it seems to be improving, put it that way. And we had a heated discussion with Paul today, and he was talking buying companies that in the midst of profit warnings. I said, don't do that. Stand well back from them. I mean, I think some of the best gains can be had from companies that go through a cycle of profit warnings and then start to recover, and they get less worse, and they start powering back out there because they get oversold, and generally they start really right. And then that upward cycle where downgrades no longer happen, upgrades start happening, and that is where you get into them. When they start coming up with good news follows good news. But bad news, like there's three or four profit warnings can happen in a row. In fact, there's that stat. Do you see that stat that this week, I think more profit warnings have happened in the last 2 years than they did in 2008 to 2009. On average, 3 to 4 profit warnings happen. So you understand that takes, literally, if you're talking about trading update interims, trading update full year, that's a year, pretty much, of bad news. So if you get in on a company that starts giving off bad news, it's going to be a rocky road for you, right? So that's not the time to get in. But the time to get in is when they have less bad news, not downgraded anymore, and then you can inevitably, hopefully, see the upcycle happening and improvements happening. But essentially, if you're going to invest in a business that's improving, not going the other way. But anyway, VLG. And VLG, like I said, seemingly looks like it's improving. They did say volume's going up, revenue's going up, the margins have improved a bit, and debt is coming down. And in fact, they did come this bold here, Golden Cross, gapped up. I would see where it goes here, but it looks decent. I mean, you have to look at the valuation and all that stuff on that. I haven't really looked at that at all. So there we are. Talking about Cambridge Cognition, which I did yesterday with Vadim, on Jan, they announced the appointment of Stuart Gall and Philip Rogers as independent non-government sector. Yeah, I saw that.
Stuart Gall, Intelligent Ultrasound.
Yeah, he was a non-exec. Who was he for? Someone. Was it Cambridge Cognition? I thought it was from a different company. So he's announced as NED. Yeah, so, Intelligent Ultrasound. Let me check that. I'm sure it's good. Yes, yeah, so very interesting. So it's obviously, it would make sense in that area, wouldn't he? So, board appointments. That's right. He is, because obviously it's in the Cambridge Cognition there. Stuart Gall there. Yeah, Stuart Gall, CEO of Intelligent Ultrasound. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. You want ecosystems. They're not doing exactly the same thing, but this is a tech enabled healthcare. Is Stuart Gall's area. So that's an appointment that makes sense. And NED with the experience that a company like Cambridge Cognition needs.
Yeah. Dagger, a more risky share is IQAI. It's had a 100K grant. 100K, this one's just swimming below surface. It could do very well. 100K, they need more money than that, don't they? IQAI, cool.
Yeah.
I can't... What do they do? Did they take a bit of a hammering of late? I'm sure the share price dropped off a cliff.
It did have a bit of a fall. I don't know this company very well. If I said that, barely know it at all.
What do they do? Dagger, I don't know what they really do.
What do they do? invest become clinical treatments to patients in the field of medical imaging diagnostics.
It is very risky, but stuff like that, again, whatever you, I keep saying this, if you're looking at a company that's making a loss, two more important things essentially is how much cash do they have, how long will it last? And I'm thinking, well, where's the last set of results here? I'm assuming, where's the results? Half year report, 17th of August, anything since? No. 17th of August, phase one results there. And I think, you know, you're going to need more than that. Let's not just catch that there. Let's scroll down. Revenue was 283. Trouble is, it's a 6 million market cap. I understand they're in a clinical trial, so it can boom up maybe if they get good results. 300 grand there at the half year, 600,000. And they had cash of 90 grand there. Where are they getting the money from? That's the thing, you know? I mean, like I said, if you're looking for a hope pipe potential story, if they haven't got cash, that becomes a story, not the actual hope pipe potential story. So just worrying that they don't have enough cash. Unless I'm missing something, unless they found a couple of quid down this back of the sofa or something. I don't know. Anything else? Let's look at the front page of Voxer, because it's not a lot going on, but there we are. Venture Life jumps. There's an interview with Paul, Venture Life. I'm interested. This is quite. I quite like.
That's interesting. Jeffrey's upgrade.
I haven't checked the interview. I mentioned this to Vadim yesterday. So this is very interesting. It's to me. It's got the potential. Now you know Game Workshop, right? It's basically obsessed hobbyists. You know, and regardless of the macro headwinds, those hobbyists will still buy because that's all that exists in their life. Petrol and motorheads are very similar to that. When they love these classic cars, we just want to get close to them and touch them. I said to Vadim yesterday, I said, what they need to do is have an AGM and all that stuff. Shareholders come along and actually stand and maybe touch the cars and stuff. And you would have a loyal shareholder base there. And I can see this really catching on.
There's massive interest in this company. I mean, yeah. I think you're right. I do think, people who love cars will be interested in this as a possible investment opportunity, but actually the reality of what they're doing, you know, there's a much more business minded angle to it. Is that these ultra premium cars deliver fantastic returns. They have there's an index called the Hagi Top Index, and that's broken down into various types of vehicle, but these are the sort of super rare historic cars, and deliver.
Well, they're one-offs, aren't they?
They're one-offs.
You always see them going, rare. But I realised you got interviews there on the website and the investment strategy. I don't understand. How are they investing in the cars then? Do you know how it works? They buy them outright, are they?
Yeah, they buy the cars.
So what's their market cap? I don't understand. That's wrong, isn't it?
They're in the process of raising 50 million, 32 million of which goes into buying six classic cars.
Oh, so they've agreed to buy these cars, but they haven't paid the money yet.
Yeah, and they're also acquiring a business called Run2, which organises, you know, the sort of very prestige classic car rallies. The kind of thing that sort of multi-millionaires and billionaires amuse themselves with. But there's a whole plan to build an ecosystem of motoring, classic motoring related businesses around this, and that will deliver the cash flow, which keeps the business ticking over, and you know, while they go out and find more cars. But yes, it's a genuinely lucrative asset class, but it's just been very difficult for investors to access it before.
Do you know what I like about this? Right, is that the people involved in this have lots of money. David Coulthard, you know, Mika Hakkinen, they're worth a lot of money, and they say here you can tell how confident they are. Raising this money, so literally they've entered into a purchase agreement for the 1970 Lamborghini Miura P40 SV. That's 3.25 million euros. Consequently, there are now purchase agreements in place for all six cars with an aggregate value of £32 million. So they say they're making progress on raising the money, and they've also said it is anticipated that this process will around to complete. It hasn't completed yet, has it?
It's still underway.
What is this? But they say here. How many companies are this? We'll be at 105, and directors of the company will additionally put £1 million in. And I'm thinking, they've got, these are the kind of people, when you have people like David Coulthard, Mika Hakkinen, and the business guys behind this, they've been rubbing shoulders, they're very rich themselves, and they've been rubbing shoulders with billionaires, because the only people who operate in that sort of atmosphere are billionaires and multi-millionaires.
But
I don't think they'll have any problems accessing capital.
That's part of the business model, you know, the reason that the likes of David Coulthard and Mick Hacken and Alec McNish are involved, because, you know, these are guys that have been at the heart of this industry, of which there are many enthusiasts. You know, there are lots of classic car collections around the world, and, you know, they do get churned. The people that own these prestige vehicles want a different vehicle, so they'll have to sell one to buy one, and that experience and that network is what enables Tetra Rouge and Andre Arley, who runs the sort of, well, he's the chief exec and the guy that's really responsible for buying the acquisition of new vehicles. That's how they hear about the cars. That's how they buy them and generate the returns that they do.
So they'll they're raising about, obviously, 30 million, but it's impressive.
It's really fascinating. A lot of interest in this one.
Yeah. Okay. I'm distracted there from looking at actually what's rising. It's not a lot here. We've got Himagenics approval and issuance of US conditioning patent. Revolution Beauty, response to allegation. I didn't understand this. I don't understand. Sorry, I'm not even sharing the screen. This was, most read here. Let me just go back. Himagenics is up now 6% on that patent there. Listen to this. Himagenics, right, is pleased to announce that its patent application method entitled Method of Eliminating Hippotopotic Stem Cells, Hippotopotic Progenitors in a Patient Using Bispecific Antibodies has been allowed to be issued. How would that just make it a bit more catchy, that title?
That's not how patents work. patent applications are not sun headlines.
Like Slippy Dogs or something like that, you know, nice catchy phrase. Like you see on the Dragon's Den, they come on with a flexible hairbrush or something. It's called something like Mantri Poo 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 or something like that. It's quite
catchy. There's probably a patent filed separately that says something like a device for, untangling particularly matted hair. So
that's a good little chart there. There we go. Hi. Someone pointed this out to me on the webinar on thing. But anyway, so that's that. So where are we back? Front page. You've got Revolution Beauty. Do you understand this? They said, right? They're embroiled in issues, aren't they? Comments by Chrysalis Investments Limited on the 29th of January stating that it believes it has certain potential claims against the company in relation to its purchase of Revolution Beauty shares.
Which doesn't sound good, does it?
And the sale of those shares in late 20... So who sold them? Revolution Beauty sold them, and they were Chrysalis. Is that right? The company has confirmed that it has received a pre-action letter from Chrysalis. Chrysalis has not commenced formal legal proceedings. I don't understand what's going on there. I mean, it's like they had their own shares, but they sold them. Amity Power has just obviously gone bust.
No, I mean, sometimes there's stories like that. There's been all sorts of shenanigans going on with that company, not least the dispute with Boohoo a while back, and a very long suspension. I call me boring, and you know, Superdry, another example. When these companies have fallen out of favour like this, when there's been such sort of disaster behind the scenes, I find that I can't really be bothered to look at them anymore.
No. Why are they rising today? To me, Superdry are not a fashion brand anymore. They are a brand for over 50s who think they're fashionable. And like I said before, if you get over 50s thinking your brand's fashionable, that's the kiss of death.
Well, it's really the takeover speculation.
So. Who'd want to take all that stock over? No. Anyway, so that's why it's rising. It's just, it's basically, what I did say to Vadim yesterday, it's almost like, helium one, not as big, of course, but it's like that. You know, you see on telly when people are in an ICU unit and someone's dying and they stand clear, everyone, and they put the old pumps on them. That's that, you know, and then all of a sudden he comes alive for a second. He's not healthy, the patient, and he says, everybody's breathing now. That's that sort of, regaining consciousness from a near death experience. But he's not going to run a marathon, that guy in the bed, patient. He's unhealthy, very unhealthy. That's what I liken that to. Anyway. anything else that's it really, isn't it? Any comments? I was told by classic car enthusiasts that there's a lot of buying as investments because of the EV market. Yes,
interesting.
You realize you're not going to see these cars anymore. I mean, they're one-offs compounded by, you're never going to see an ICE car, you know, internal combustion engine car like that of the Lamborghini there ever again. So even if they make a sort of classic, EV version of it, it's not, you know, old. Wait, exactly. When you stop selling petrol and diesel engines, that makes them even more rare, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah. Well, the Ford make an EV version of their Mustang.
Okay.
It's not the same car.
No.
Not the same car at all.
No, but it's exactly when you think that. Haven't Ferrari managed to replicate that, you know, in the exhaust now? Because I don't know if they've done
that.
Anyway, how does he know this? Just stick to the interest rates, yeah? This is Bailey saying AI will not be a mass destroyer of jobs. He says,
he's probably right.
Probably.
He is probably right.
Yeah. Well, it will destroy some jobs, but you always have to.
But the loom destroyed jobs. You know, it destroyed the jobs of the people that could use a spinning wheel. So you know, it's just progress. How technology works, it's progress.
Exactly.
What happens is, yeah, there will be certain jobs, the back office jobs, for example, that might be done better by AI. You know,
I'm not saying that. I just don't want Andrew Bailey to just don't worry about interest rates. You don't worry about AI. And listen, I don't want the man to be right, okay? That's it.
But he has to talk about...
What do you think of AI, Andrew? I don't think it'll be a mass destroyer of jobs. Thank you, Andrew. What about interest rates? Are they coming down? We can't say it's too early to talk about that. Andrew, a robot could do your job better than you. Anyway.
No, well, that's it's potentially true.
Yeah. UK's public long-run inflation expectations rise to 9-month high. Well, this has went down recently. What are they asking? What do the public know? What do they know? I don't know. Why do they even pay attention to this? It's a YouGov poll, by the way.
Mr. McGrath.
Apple iPhone sales slumped in China. Essentially, they did say 3 months to 30 December, tech giant reported sales of 120 billion. This is in 3 months. 120 billion. How do you even package that amount of iPhones? It's phenomenal. I did try and do the maths on that once. I did do the maths. How many iPhones are packed in a quarter? That seems logistically impossible. But anyway.
Large factories in China and India.
Yeah, where people are not very healthy and throw themselves out of windows. Comfortably beating targets set by analysts. There we are. However, Apple's chief financial officer warned the revenue in this current quarter will be at least $5 billion, less than the same period a year ago. Sales of iPhone in China, key market, sharp focus, they were $3 billion. But they're saying now they worry about Huawei, because Huawei got foldy phones. Apple can do that. Apple never first to be up front on the tech, but they do it better later. So they'll be looking at fold-away phones, and so you fold yours in half, we can do ours in quarters. See? You can literally put it in your nostrils, as small as it gets.
Yeah, I do think China is a concern for certainly for Apple. You know, there was a deal struck many, many years ago regarding Apple's operations in China, and you know, it is a competitive market. They do have domestic brands, and you know, there is a sort of isolationism going on there. And Tesla is in the same boat. Actually, I think Tesla has obviously quite big operations in China. I do worry about. What trajectory business for the likes of big tech companies is going to take in China?
Yeah, well, I think we should be worried about China altogether, because right now they're quite desperate. You know, they're literally struggling a heck of a lot, aren't they?
The worry is what happens if Trump gets in, and you know, sort of the anti-China rhetoric cranks up again.
Well, do you know what? Exactly. And I don't understand they only have themselves to blame, you know, America, if they put Trump back in. As trouble is with Trump, he's a very forceful character, and he's a Marmite, isn't he? But the people who love him, and they will go out in all weathers to vote for him. Now, the people against him, they support different people. So the joint force isn't as strong. So it's almost like no one loves Biden as much as people love Trump, you know, the actual supporters. No one's as fervent about Biden. Biden supporters aren't as fervent about him. But there's people. Trump creates that sort of, either they love him, well, I actually hate him, you know, so that's the trouble. He's a force to be reckoned with.
One to watch as the year progresses.
Yeah. In fact, just come on Vox, Diageo kicks off search for new chairman. There we are. Mm. That's on Vox right now. So if you want to put your applications in, John, go for it, fella. Have a nice weekend, everyone. Just make sure I haven't missed anything else. I like that, Pietra. Oh, by the way, John, I like your ADF purchase. I think the film and TV industry very strong. I was looking at Netflix numbers, and I think it's one area that is not going to be affected by cost of living crisis. Because what are people doing if they don't go out, right? If they don't spend money outside, which now we're all seeing, you know, the leisure sector is taking a hit. What are they doing? most people are sitting in front of a paid-for connected TV and Netflix. And who, you know, supplies all those kind of people with all facilities in the UK?
Yeah.
It's a strong industry, I think. And we are, you know, a world-beating industry. So that's, when you look at sectors, I think that is a very strong sector, film and TV industry in the UK.
Well, I'm still waiting for that one to come good.
It'll come good. I think people don't know about it. It's been listed. People don't know about it. They had a little. It was on people's radars. The strike happened. It hasn't really recovered. The strike's over. Everyone. You know, that's a little company. Andy Dixon Facilities, ADF. Have a nice weekend, everyone. Speak to you next week.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.